Before we start, let me just give you a few marmacomos. Again, I want to talk a little bit about some of the smaller topics, starting out, and then I want to talk about Shtei Kesef a little bit more, and then we said we wanted to do something on Mem Aleph, right? Mavich, Vodorai, Sel, Shvod, Rabbanan, and the Shtabali, the Lo Pratichas. So regarding that, so let me just give you some marmacomos for that. So that's the Gemara here on Mem Aleph Amud Aleph. Again, Mem Amud Aleph we did earlier in the year when we did Eid Echad. We'll try to fill in a little bit. But Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, Ma'ika Ben Shvud Araisa L'Shvud Rabbanan. And look at the, again, some of the stuff we've done already even now. But Rashi, Tosis, look at the Ran Alatar. Look at the Ran Mamin Pirshim Mishnayis on this Mishnah, Vav Aleph. And we've seen it already, pretty much. You know, it's what is it? What drabanan? What's daraisa? In other words, is this a contrast between daraisa and all drabanans, or heses, or heses and kain daraisas? The different views of the Rishonim. The Rambam Pirush Mishnah is Vav Aleph and also Zion Dalid, where he talks about chashud, and the Rambam Chustoin Perik Aleph, Perik Gimel Halacha Zion. Perek Yud Aleph Hilchos Shavuos, the ones that we've seen pretty much. The second Mar Makom, again, this is overlap from things that we've seen regarding the Kitas Chayfeds too, but again, just to put it in better perspective, Ksuvas Peches Omen Aleph, you know, I Pikeach maybe Lidei Shavua Daraisa, that Gemara, and the Rashi and Tosis there and Tosis here, which we discussed already, but also the Rush and the Riff and the Ramban. The Ramban in the Shidu Kubetzas in Ksuvas 226, column 2, if it makes it easier to find it. The Gemara in Gittin, Lamed Hei Omed Aleph, the issue of Shvua Chutz Lebezdin, and Rashi and Tosas there. In addition to what we already talked about regarding Chashud, I think I made allusion to it. Adam, Enadam Orish Shvua Lebanav, and the Sugya of Havu Delolosi Falah. Rab and Shmuel. That's the Gemara in Shavuos, Mem Zayin Amud Aleph, and again Mem Ches Amud Aleph to Mem Ches Amud Beis. The Rab of Shmuel Havud Lalosif Allah. What does that mean, Havud Lalosif Allah? So the Balamor and the Ramban in Mochamos, Balamor, Ramban and Mochamos, at the end of Perek Zayin, where that is, and of course the Rambam and the Ravid, Hilchos Toein, Perek Beis Halacha Hei. Hilchos Malva Velova Perek Yud Zayin Gimel through Hay. The Ran Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph to Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis on the Dape Arif. The Rush Mem Chesam and Aleph. The Nimuka Yosef and Gittin on Lamed Hay Omed Aleph. What do we mean when we say about that topic? Havu de Lalosef Allah, that we treat certain Shavuos as if they are singular. Okay. Regarding, and also the Tshuvas Arif that's quoted by the Rush in Ksuvas, Pei Zayin, Amud Aleph. Okay. Regarding the Shvua of Gviya Miyasomim, which is what they're talking about, that's the Havad Lalosif Allah, so it has some sort of special status. Rashi in Ksuvas, Pei Zayin, Amud Aleph on the Mishnah there. Tosis Shavuos Mem Aleph Amud Aleph, Diramasho Vechi. The formulation of Balamor Rush in Shavuos Mem Chesam and Aleph regarding Chashud, as we discussed. Regarding Ishtabali Delo Praticha, that's another extreme case within Nishba Vedotel, but what's unusual about it is that you require Taina, and the question is whether you also say Taninan, but typically most Nishba Vedotels don't need a Taina, right? It's just they're automatic, Midrabana. So that's the Gemara here again on Mem Aleph Amad Aleph. Tosas Dibra Maskel Mar Baravashi, the Diuk of the Kesef Mishnah in the Rambam in Chostoin Beis Hay, the one that we've seen already. Look at Choshem Mishpat Simin Pei Beis Sif Gimel, and the Shach and Taz there, and Sivav regarding Choshud, the Shach Sif Katan Yud Tes. And if you get a chance, the Pnei Oshu and Gittin, and that so give a Lamed Dalet Omed Beis to Lamed Hei Omed Aleph, and the Rambam in Perek Dalet Hilchos Malve and the Hagos Memunios as well. That's for Shtabli Delo Praticha. an amana nifras minixa yisomim. That's the Gemara in Gittin Lamed Hamed Aleph. And look also at the Nebuchadnezzar Yosef there in Gittin Lamed Hey Omed Aleph, and same again at Rosh and Shavuos, etc. Whether or not this is something singular or more general, look also at the Rambam in Perek Tezayin Hilchos Ishus, and the Shach Simin Pei Beis Sifkatan Yutes. I think I gave you that already. Okay, that's pretty much, you know, if we can get through that, that will be I think, you know, very much representative of the issues, some of the issues at least in there. Okay, so well, we did this last thing that we discussed was the problem or the factor of Lashon HaKodesh and Kol Lashon, and what we were trying to do was to you know, establish some sort of criteria, right, when we're makbid on Lashon HaKodesh lechatchila b'di'eved, and on the basis, on what basis, you know, that would be. Again, as a text, as a you know, language of Klal Yisrael, the formal language of Klal Yisrael, as a reenactment, and therefore as the original language, betoras, things that lose something otherwise in the translation, betoras, ium, like four or five different factors, some of which overlap, and some of which don't, some of which are more principled, some of which are more pragmatic, but reasons why there would be a din of Lashon HaKodesh, in some cases, you know, mima'akev, in other cases, l'chatchila, in some case as, you know, an additional halacha, in some cases as the only halacha. Again, I think you know, when it comes to limud haTorah as opposed to kriyas haTorah, the idea that that would really be ma'akev given v'gisa b'yom v'layla, even according to the Ravid, as quoted in the Shittim Gubetzas, I think is, you know, not nitan lehe omer, meaning that there's no kiyum talmud Torah, b'kol lashon, not, I think, sayable, but that is an added dimension, and that, you know, there's always an element of, you know, lechatchila, or connecting to Klal Yisrael, all the text, etc. Talked about all of those issues. Even if we hold that there are things that are b'kol lashon, even some of the things that are b'kol lashon, right, there remains an interesting question, also different models. One is that b'kol lashon, because there's no yichus whatsoever of Lashon HaKodesh, even of Lashon HaKodesh, because, again, it's the ideas, it's the concepts. You know, we've, let's say, in situations where we've eliminated, you know, the idea of the origin, or the, you know, it being, you know, something that, you know, is inimitable, you know, in terms of conveying it in any other way. But we also noted that there are cases of Kol Lashon where there remains a concept of text, or of, you know, reenactment, or fidelity, you know, to the diuk, you know, to the precision, you know, of the original. And those are situations where, you know, you kind of have to compensate, you know, when it's Kol Lashon. And that's an example of that is the Rambam and the Ravid discussion about Kriyat Shema, but it could apply to other things, you know, as well. Wherever there's a parsha and a text, and multiple, you know, meanings that, you know, result from, you know, the particular language that is being used, then you might have those things, even if they're not ma'akev, and that becomes very challenging, either that the lechatchila of Lashon HaKodesh, or at least, you know, that the precision required for Tirgum. Tirgum is different than, you know, there not being a concept of text whatsoever. So that's the kind of things that we were looking at. And then, you know, to assess each one individually, what about Kriyat Shema? What about Parsha Sota? What about Hallel? You know, what about, you know, Brachos? What about Tefillah? What about Tefillah B'Tzibur? What about Kriyas HaTorah B'Tzibur? What about Limud HaTorah? You know, and so on and so forth. All those, what about Bikurim? What about Vidui Maestros? What about the relationship between Bikurim and Vidui Maestros? Right, all these become things that reinforce the rules and the categories, the two categories, or the subcategories within the two categories, and they also become a window to understand better, right, some of the facets, some of the dimensions of each individual, you know, halacha on these lists. You know, how do we look at halal? How do we look at limud haTorah? You know, bitzibur and biyachid. How do we look at, you know, kriyas shema and so on and so forth? So that's the topic that we did, and there's certainly more, much more to talk about it. But I think the Chida in his Haggadah says that, you know, when he talks about, you know, halach ma'anya, you know, being written in Aramaic, so, you know, he has a like a very sharp, you know, language where he talks about, again, Arami, Oved, Avi, and he says something like, you know, that, you know, had the Torah been purist, had there not been Yagar Sadusa or any Tirgum in the Torah, then maybe there, you know, wouldn't have been, you know, a Yetzias Mitzrayim, or the, you know, in a way it's like a concession, you know, to a less than perfect Loshinu as Lashonam, you know, together with the, you know, Malbusham and Shemosam. So, you know, the reason that, you know, we start Halach Manya and so on, and we emphasize the Aramaic, let's say, parts of the Haggadah, is to highlight that, you know, we wouldn't be in this mess, or we wouldn't have needed a Yeshua, you know, had the fidelity, I guess, to Loshinu as Lashonam, and the, you know, the embrace of Lashon HaKodesh in particular, and everything that goes with it, you know, applied. So that's like a very strong, let's say, opinion, and very, I don't think it's, you know, representative of the general view, which is much, much more flexible, you know, even of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which isn't mostly textual, though we use texts, but it's interesting, and it's within the range, and it's just something to think about, and we talked about, you know, all sorts of variations, even within Torah itself. There was a question? Yeah.
I was just going to say, like, our approach to that Ravid, or Shtick Vetzet about Talmud Torah, unless, of course, our parallels, like, our understanding of, like, the Ramban about Mitzvot outside of Eretz Yisrael, that doesn't actually literally...
Yeah, yeah. I think so. I think it is a good example. That's what I was asking. Again, you know, the Sifrei in Parshas Ekev, which seems to say that Rashi quotes, that the Ramban quotes, that the Ramban expands upon, that the Ramban seems particularly enamored with, you know, that mitzvos that are performed in Chutz Laaretz, even Chovetz HaGuf, like, you know, Tefillin and Tzitzis and Mezuzah, you know, that are just like, you know, Chinuch. So, you know, those are very, very problematic statements. You know, if you take them, you know, literally, and if you take them, you know, as self-sufficient, you know, standalone statements, to the extent that we see that, you know, people were scrambling, whether it's the Gra, you know, who, you know, tried to change the Girsa, or suggested that it was a mistaken Girsa, which doesn't really work. He probably knew that too. I mean, if I work in Rashi, it doesn't work in the Sifrei, but it reflects, like, you know, he couldn't believe it, like, you know, he couldn't abide it. And or the Beis Halevi, you know, have Tzivi Lach Tziunim in his pshat. I thought that the pshat in the Sifrei was that, you know, it's not a coincidence that, you know, Vahayu Advarim Ha'ela, that this Sifrei comes on the psukim in Vahayu, you know, Advarim Ha'ela, and not, you know, in the first parsha of Kriya Shema, because I'll note that, you know, that Vahayim Shemo is written B'lashon Rabim, you know, whereas Kriya Shema is written, first parsha of Kriya Shema is written B'lashon Yachid. The idea being that, you know, from the Rabim perspective, right, Eretz Yisrael is always a dimension, even in every individual, you know, Chovas HaMitzvah. Like, there's a, you know, Vishinanta Levanecha and Vishinantem, you know, Levanechem, or Vilimaritem Osam, you know, aspect. And, you know, from that point of view, you know, even Tefillin and Mezuzah and Tzitzis, which are individual Mutalos al Yachid, and they're Chovas HaGavra, and they're not Mitzvah Satlias Ba'aretz, right, there's an element that, you know, is lost when you don't do them B'toris, you know, B'tocha Tzibur, and Eretz Yisrael is the national headquarters of the Jewish people. And therefore, in some sense, it's kind of like Chinuch, but not the individual part. That's my suggestion. But again, it does come. And again, that's, I think, we'll talk a little bit today, it's very, very briefly. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazeh or Zebazeh, depending on the girsa, you know, where individual mitzvos are connected, you know, to not just, but, you know, to your own performance, but they're mitzuraf to other members of Kol Yisrael. And things like, we'll talk in just for a second about Chatei Kedei Shetasak Chaberka, which is an interesting sugya that comes up. And I think the last time that we did it here was on Shabbos some years ago. Anybody around since Shabbos? Yeah? Okay, good. We didn't spend time on that then, right? Yeah. So it's a kind of, you know, as we really see that even individual mitzvos, and of course, you know, there are maybe different standards for different types of mitzvos too. You know, taking into consideration, you know, the degree to which the tzibur, let's say, dimension is there. But the general idea that, you know, that even individual mitzvos, chovos hagavra, you know, are connected, you know, to your status as a member of Klal Yisrael, both in terms of Kedushas Yisrael, but also to that, you know, being part of the Kiyum itself, and therefore doing it B'toch HaTzibur, or I think that all those things explain the Sifrei. Now, but at the end of the day, this is what the brief comment that Avraham made, which I'm expanding on, at the end of the day, you have, you know, to be honest about it. If you were to take the Sifrei and read it in an unvarnished way, it sounds like it's saying much more than that. It sounds like, you know, a very strong, you know, Shlilat HaGola, you know, very strong Zionistic statement. It's not a coincidence that the, you know, people who enthusiastically embrace that kind of an ideology, you know, they really, in, you know, they like invoking that Sifri. And the truth is, it's fair, because it really is what the text says. But, as we've explained many times, you know, sometimes the global evidence, you know, forces us, you know, to narrow, you know, a particular piece of evidence. And then, of course, you have to make the case, and then other people will decide whether they feel that's justified or not. In my opinion, you know, the preponderant, you know, global evidence is so overwhelming, you know, that the performance of mitzvos and chutz la'aretz, you know, is not just a din and chinuch, you know, as we know it, you know, the din derabbanan that is a chiyuv on a parent, or, you know, or just training, you know, just keeping practice, you know, for, or practicing for the big moment. I think it trivializes, you know, mitzvos to such an extent, and is so inconsistent with the, you know, general importance and value that we place upon them, that, you know, I think you have two choices. One is to say the Sifrei is just a, you know, charig, it's an oddity, it's an anomaly. It means what it says, but, you know, just not a mainstream. I'd rather not say that about a Sifrei. Sifreis are very, you know, very important makoros. The other possibility is to say that, you know, it's sharply written, and it definitely reflects something very important, instead of just, you know, kind of completely darshaning it out of existence. You know, I think what I'm suggesting is very important, but that, you know, you have to take it, you know, with a measure that you know, that allows for the, you know, overwhelming evidence of the importance of mitzvos. You know, b'chol moshvos seichem, you know, the Torah itself says b'chol moshvos seichem all over the place, and this is the mindset and also the halacha as we have it, and therefore to see it in this way. And so too, which is what Avram was commenting on, again, I agree that if you took the Ravid's, you know, the words as they are, you know, quoted in the Shittim Kubetzis and in Brachos of the Ravid, you could get the impression that, you know, he does seem to say that you're not Yotze at all, you know, unless you, according to that Mandamar, unless, you know, the Limud takes place, B'lashon HaKodesh. But the fact that the Makar is Vagisa by Yom HaVelayla, which applies even to Makshava, and you know, the just what the nature of Limud HaTorah itself is, and the fact that certainly in Torah Sheba'al Peh we're talking about concepts and ideas rather than a text, you know, makes it inconceivable to me that that's what he means. So if you want to say, you know, this is just a strange rive and we don't paskin like it, you know, that you could say that. I prefer not to say that. You know, I won't say I'm machmir in mainstreaming the Ravid, you know, even at the expense of qualifying it in a significant way. You could say what I think some of you mentioned that Revelvel says, which is that, you know, this is a distinction between Torah Shebichsav, you know, and Torah Shebal Peh. Maybe. Certainly that makes sense in the stature of Lashon HaKodesh in general. But again, since he's talking about V'hagisa Bayom V'alayla, which, you know, is not specifically about Torah Shebichsav either, it's hard to say that. And again, the Gemara quotes the Pasuk in Yoshua for general Limud HaTorah, Yibay Patanav Shebikriyat Shema Shachas V'Arvus. That happens to be Torah Shebichsav. But the idea is, you know, whatever you do, you know, you can fulfill, you know, day and, you know, during the day and at night. And certainly the more maximal view of day and night isn't limited to Torah Shebichsav. That very, very clear. I don't know if you could learn, you know, Torah Shebichsav alone, you know, day and night, every day and night. So you could learn it, you know, if it's also the source of Torah Shebal Peh and ideas. So to me, you know, notwithstanding the words, I just think that it's more likely that that's a, you know, the Ravid was overcompensating and making a very strong statement, you know, about something which you lose irrevocably. But I don't think that he meant, I don't think it's conceivable that he meant that you're not Yotze. And certainly the omission from the Mishnah in Sota, you know, definitely, and the idea that Kriyashma, which also is connected, again, with Limud HaTorah, in a very significant way, and that's Bekol Lashon. You know, the whole, everything combined just leads us to believe that, light of the global evidence, that you just have to moderate, you know, the meaning or the application of that statement. So I do think that that's a great example of that. Anyways, so much for Lashon HaKodesh and Kol Lashon, which is a very fascinating topic. And as I say, there's certainly much more, I think in general terms, we have hit on the big themes, and each individual case, you know, as it comes up, requires definitely much more attention. So now I just want to speak very quickly about you know, some of the other things that we missed, that we didn't get a chance to talk about, very, very quickly. So one is the line here in the Gemara about Gerim, and then we'll start talking about Rav and Shmuel. What does the Gemara say here about Gerim, Yoni? Just like a, again, it's just an interesting line, right? Yeah. So we're mashbia you. How's the line? Do you have it? Yeah. Okay. So both of these things, all three of these things, are very fascinating, right? The one is that it refers to Doris Habayim and Gerim Hasidim Lizgayir, and the other one is that it refers to Mitzvos Hasidos Lizchadish. So regarding you know, Doris Habayim, you know, Esa Sher Yeshna Po Ve Esa Sher Inenu, I think we talked about that again. Not everybody who's in this room, but you know, we did talk about that. You know, I think in the context of Hilchos Tshuva and others. Other, you know, situations, and that is that, you know, the tzibor, the concept of tzibor, right, is a kind of mitzaref. That's, what does it mean when you say, you know, that it includes, you know, doros haboy, or even ketanim, you know, at the time, never mind, a bigger chiddush, of course, doros haboy. So there are, again, a midrashim and mefarshim, you know, who speak about, you know, the neshamos of Klal Yisrael all being present, you know, at Har Sinai. And again, you know, that's a very valid, you know, concept and idea. You know, it's not the kind of thing that we understand concretely so well, just because of the nature of it being, you know, a different kind of an idea. But certainly we don't dismiss that. And it has very, very strong roots in Chazal. And therefore, it's a very acceptable concept. But there is a way to understand this idea without that, or maybe even better, a way to understand, what we mean also, by that. And that, of course, is the idea that, Es Asher Yeshno Po, the Es Asher Einenu, is that what took place on, Har Sinai. Again, very similar to what we just said about, Eretz Yisrael and other things. What took place, for the individuals who were there, but the individuals who were there also constituted, a chalos called Klal Yisrael. And that chalos, that klal, that representation, has tremendous implications. Again, we talked about, the Eretz Yisrael and the Rabbin. For every mitzvah, there's a tzibur, element and a stronger key of tzibur, and one that connects up to Kol Yisrael Arevim. That's one side of it. And the other side of it is Es Asher Yeshno, the Es Asher Einenu. In other words, the tzibur as a collective and as a chalos, is something that relates, to every member that, even the future will be identified with it. Again, there's a lot of, I always like to quote the Amshel Shlomo, beginning of Hakdamah Bava Kama, actually, which is that, the range of, Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, was defined by the, by the Shishim Ribo, who were listening, at Maimon Har Sinai, or were present at Maimon Har Sinai. That, the way, obviously there wasn't such a radical difference between what one person heard and another, but the nuances or whatever, that constituted like the full range and legitimized, different, nuanced perspectives of what was received. So that, has its own implications, but part of that story is this story of, there being an individual Kabbalah Satorah, and as we know, in the language of Kabbalah Satorah, right, sometimes it's Yachid and sometimes it's Rabbim, and there's a debate which, whether the Yachid refers to the Rabbim and the Rabbim to each Yachid or vice versa. It's an interesting debate too. But the point is that certainly this was a dual Kabbalah. And that's what we mean, about the range. Again, the Shalah in his Akdama says, if Ramah, Chevarim, and Shasa, Gidim are supposedly represented symbolically by the Essen and the Lavin, so I might expansion a little bit, is I think what he's saying. So, symbolically what that means is like a balanced life, a life, of homeostasis, an effective, way of living, requires that one embrace, the totality of the system. And we've talked a lot about this, the holistic, aspect of the commitment, to Torah and mitzvahs. But if that's the case, he says, so it's really strange because no individual can really accomplish Taryag mitzvahs, right? If you're a Kohen, if you're a Levi, if you're a male, if you're a female, there are always going to be situations in which you fall short, sometimes considerably short, of the Taryag. But if it really is, Ramach Evarim and Shasa Gidim, symbolically, you need it all, for that perfect izun, that perfect balance, the mizug, whatever you want to call it. So, how does that work? So he says no, because, every member, every individual member of Klal Yisrael is also a member of the collective of Klal Yisrael. So, in that sense, we're mitzuref to Taryag mitzvahs. The Or Chaim HaKadosh, when he taught in Parshas Emor, makes a big, big push for the idea, and I think it has very strong halachic roots, and there's a lot to say about it, that the parshios of Kahuna, are not just, for the Kohanim. They belong to Klal Yisrael. Because the Kohanim, Kahuna Gedola, Kohanim Hediotos, the Avoda, right, it all belongs, just like the Malchus belongs to Klal Yisrael, even though each individual, all the Kesarim, if you want to call it, You know, all the individuations and so on belong to the total. Again, I like to say that, you know, unlike, you know, modern sensibilities, and this is very, very important for us to understand, you know, with especially some of the toxicity that surrounds us, and that is that, that, you know, Torah really believes in a very specialized, or the benefits of specialization, we'll call it. It doesn't believe that, you know, and this is the Korach argument, Kol Eido Kulam Kedoshim B'socham Hashem, you know, means that, you know, everybody has exactly, you know, the same function and exactly the same opportunity. That's true about 85 or 90%. And then there's the tziruf, you know, everybody to the things that they don't have and the benefits of specialization, you know, for having set it up that way. That's divine wisdom, you know, but we believe that to be the case. So there's a benefit for Keser Kahuna and Keser Malchus. Of course, Keser Torah's Omid Muhan Lakol. But that's how you get, you know, a tziruf to Taryag Mitzvah. So the Eis Asher Yeshno ve'Eis Asher Einenu, you know, is accomplished through the tzibur. We learned Sanhedrin a couple of years ago. We were talking about, you know, again, the end of the Torah seems to say, in the end of Devarim, this seems to be and that's the way Chazal understood it, the Havtacha that the Ribbono Shalom gives us, that, you know, Torah will not be nishtakach, you know, from Klal Yisrael. So you can see that as just a hardcore promise and commitment, and certainly is. It's very important. Even though it seems that many times it practically was, you know, and we have to be proactive, you know, and secure it. Eis lasos Hashem eferet Torah secha, even, right? But in addition to being a haftacha, it's a haftacha again, which is rooted, right, in the mechanisms. And I was suggesting then that, you know, it's the same idea. Torah is not going to be nishtakach mi Yisrael because it always, you know, is the repository is always there, you know, on the tzibur level. Klal Yisrael always has it. And even if every single individual loses it, there's some element of Klal Yisrael having it. Don't ask me to explain that, but that's true. And that's the concept of Hakel, I think. And that's the concept of Eis Asher Yeshno v'Eis Asher Einenu, meaning, and that's the concept, I think, of what we were trying to connect it to at that time. You know, the Rambam's famous Chiddush HaSmicha, which is that, you know, even if the line actually, you know, gets broken on an ish mi pi ish mi pi ish mi pi ish, you know, ad beis dino, to use the language of the Rambam himself, ad beis dino shel Yoshua, ad beis dino shel Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, both, even if that line gets disrupted, right, if kol chachmei Yisrael, be'eretz Yisrael, or rov, or whatever it is, you know, get together and they want to, you know, renew that. Now again, that's a great example of an unbelievable Chiddush HaRambam, you know, when there's no Makar, basically. The Makar is his global understanding and the fact that it's, you know, that it cannot be that you can't, inconceivable according to the Rambam, in terms of the other Haftachos, that you can't renew, you know, Smicha. I'm not saying that we should do it right now, but I'm just saying that in general, the capacity to do that, according to the Rambam, is like a sine qua non. He just like a, it has to be so, and it's an amazing chiddush. But I think that where it comes from is from this idea, and that is that, you know, kol chachme Yisrael together, as represented by either rov or kol in Eretz Yisrael, represent the repository of Torah, and that's part of the Haftacha, that it's not Mishtakeach. So the disrupted chain refers to the methodology, you know, the more concrete, you know, and standard methodology of Ish Mipi, Ish Mipi, Ish Mipi, Ish of Chachmei Masorah, which is also based on the repository, frankly. That's why you have the outsized role for these Chachmei Masorah. But the point is that even when that gets disrupted, if you can find another way to tap in, if you will, to the to that repository, you know, you can jumpstart, I guess, or kickstart, you know, the process all over again. And the Rambam just knew that this was true, you know, as, you know, a yearly, but a yearly, you know, which was so indispensable, you know, if it were, you know, or will be indispensable, you know, to initiating the next phase of Jewish history in a way. So that is all based on this idea. That's the idea of Doros Haboy. It isn't just, you know, some mystical idea of the Neshamos being there. Maybe that's what the pshat of the Neshamos being there is. Again, one is not mutually exclusive to the other, but this, I think, is the idea. And this is also, to some extent, it becomes a little more challenging to say this about Geirin. But it becomes possible, I think, you know, to say it. So when it comes to the line about Geirin, I think that, you know, we find two perspectives. One is, again, the Gemara says in Shabbos, what is it, on Kuf Mem Vav or so, you know, that Mazalayu was Gabayu, the mazel of the Geirin, you know, were present. What does that mean? So again, I think there are, you know, two possibilities, or three. And taking a step back, of course, in Geirus, it's a little bit more difficult to say than it is about the, you know, natural, you know, citizens of Klal Yisrael, you know, who were represented by their, ancestors, you know, whose Kabbalah, you know, operated in their behalf, either as ancestors or especially as representatives of the total Klal, which then included them, but which were then anticipated to include them. You know, the progeny, the Dori Doros, that would be included. It's much harder, obviously, to say that about people who will have to take initiative, who are presently, in other words, part of a different history, you know, and a different reality. We don't think that the differences between Klal Yisrael and Umos HaOlam are small. We do think that Shemitz B'nei Noach and the possibility of Chasidei Umos HaOlam and the idea of Ger Toshav, you know, somewhat bridge the gap, but there remains a huge gap, you know, nonetheless. So to say, you know, about people who have a different present stature, status, you know, reality, and who require an initiative and a transformation, which is defined as, you know, a kikaton, you know, shenola dummy, gershon is gair kikaton shenola dummy, and we mean that literally, meaning alpidin, you know, the ger, you know, is no longer related to his biological parents, like he could marry his sister and his mother. We don't allow him to, midrabanan, but midaraisa, you know, it's an absolute bria. Chadasha. So to say about people who have a different religious stature and destiny at the moment, and who require, a davar shalom bali olam maisa, like the Gemara says in Kiddushin, you know, about a tanai or a kinyan to a ger la'achar giyur, that, you know, it's a davar shalom bali olam, you know. Mikar behema hachadas acheres. If you're talking about an akum, so, and it's kakatan shenola dami. So to say that, you know, even then you can say esa shereyeshno veesa shereinenu, that it refers not only to doros abayim, you know, who have that DNA and who, you know, come from people who were there, again, who, you know, are predictably part of that future. To say the same thing about Geirin is challenging. And yet, once you are taking the perspective, you know, either the perspectives that, you know, that somehow they're there, or especially the perspective that they're there by means of the tzibur or the destiny of Klal Yisrael, so what you need to say, you know, is one of two or maybe two overlapping things. One is, the question is, to what extent is every ger somebody who we perceive, this is a kind of an abstract question, to be destined to be misgayer? Or do we really see that as a total initiative and a total break? It is for sure halachically a break from his past. They say that that's a davar pasha. But that, you know, doesn't, you know, exclude the possibility. It's not incompatible with saying that, you know, this was part of the destiny of this individual, you know, going back. Again, Chazal here and there say, oh, you know, Safa Baruach HaKodesh, that nobody was going to be Misgayer, you know, in the Korach Parsha. So what do we mean by that? Just practically, or, you know, because it is a little bit of a, it's a Davar Bali Olam, even as it's a Davar Shalom Bali Olam, you know, to some extent. Is there some sort of a destiny that, you know, we can't know it, but, you know, we can speculate about it. If not, and even if there is, you still, I think, need the tzibur element, you know, for a proper, effective tzibur. Because no matter what you say, you know, even if there's some element of destiny, there's still the davar shel bali olam. And there's still everything that I just mentioned, which makes it much more challenging, you know, than tinokos, you know, or doros habayim, you know, of Klal Yisrael. So what you still need to do is say that, you know, if there is a connection, it's through the corporateness. When a person joins Klal Yisrael, he joins the corporation. So to what extent, you know, does he, you know, become part of its history, you know, as well? And that's an issue. So there is like a whole literature about this, about this question, in other words, how we look at Geirim. If we take the view that all Geirim, you know, on every level are only Geirim, you know, Mikanu Lahaba, that's certainly halachically the case. So again, understanding some of the limitations and some of the discussions becomes easier, right? To know Srara, you know, when can they say, you know, Elokeinu, you know, when can they refer to, you know, historical experiences of Klal Yisrael as their own? We'll get to that in just a second. You know, what about Nevuah? Any limitations can be totally understood, you know, if, you know, the Geir's change, you know, is a complete change, without any kind of destiny, you know, whatsoever. On the other hand, the idea that, you know, this individual, let's say, was destined to become part of this Tzibor, does not preclude understanding those things either. You could say that, number one, it's a din in the tzibur itself and the perception. Like, there are certain, let's say, srara in particular, you know, just as srara, l'chatchila at least, requires, you know, that a person not be a balmum. You know, in other words, you want to optimize or maximize the likelihood that stubborn Klal Yisrael are going to listen to its leaders of a certain type, and therefore there are certain requirements that we insist on. And one of those is a yichus thing. Moreover, there might be a recognition that, you know, being a from birth, you know, member, you know, sensitizes you to certain things, you know, in a way, again, as a lo plug. I'm not talking about an individual ger who might have immense sensitivity, you know, or, and, you know, many, you know, born, you know, Jews who have immense, you know, lack of sensitivity. But, you know, in terms of, let's say, making more likely the, you know, a good fit for certain kind of leadership, or certain capacities, you know, the environment, you know, in which you were brought up, you know, both practical and even, you know, objective and spiritual, and maybe even mystical, you know, make a difference. So this is an interesting, very interesting question. So with regard to, for example, again, we know the limits of Srara. There's a big discussion about Nevuah. Again, everybody knows the Rabbi Yehuda Levi and the Maral and others who thought that these kind of limitations were more, I wouldn't say racial exactly, but they are, you know, kind of in the spiritual makeup, the DNA of a ger versus a member of Klal Yisrael. Again, the Maral himself happens to have very dialectical views on these issues. You know, he on the one hand, you know, is comfortable with accentuating, you know, the unbridgeable, you know, differences, and at the same time, in some places at least, you know, seems to formulate, you know, a kind of full integration and a destiny idea, as well. Merah happens to be just more complicated. With regard to Bikurim, can you say Hashem Elokeinu, Avoseinu? That's a whole discussion in the Yerushalmi. Do you need separate limudim for things like, you know, Kriya Samagila, and so on and so forth? What about Vidui Maestros? So the Yerushalmi says that Vidui Maestros can be said by a ger. The Rambam in Hilchos Bikurim, as the Mishnah Lamelech notes, seems to disagree. Where is that? In Hilchos Bikurim Perek Dalet Halacha Gimel, the piece of the Mishnah Lamelech. The Rambam in Hilchos Bikurim, is it Gimel Dalet or Dalet Gimel?
I think I meant
Dalet Gimel, sorry. You have a language there?
That's the one I'm curious.
Yeah. And the Rambam paskins that ger is maybe bikurim and korei, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead, you have it?
So he says, Avla ger maybe bikurei, the pisha nemer, la Abraham, amun galim, nisafifa, arehu av kola olam kulo, shenechasim tachas kanfei ashkina, ula Abraham, esa hashvua tefila, shenirshu bana besarets.
Yeah. So both in terms of the ability to say Elokein Evoseinu and to invoke Avram Avinu, right, and Nachala, you can do it. But the Mishnah Melech points out that in Vidui Maestros, right? What does he have there?
So from the Rambam in Maestros Shemi?
Yeah.
So he says, Yisrael u'mamzirim misvadim, aval lo girim ha'avadim mishukarim, yishayivayim pelek ba'aretz, v'harei vomer kashir nishmat ala Avoseinu.
Yeah. And the Mishnah Melech is troubled by it. So the Mishnah Melech himself wants to know what the difference is. You see that? He says, Bikurim refers to the future, and Vidui Maestros is referring to experiences of the past. So that's a very interesting line. We'll get back to that in just a second. Anyways, the idea of destiny in particular may be, what's this of a Mazalayu Hayasham? That's a Gemara in Shabbos on Kuf Mem Vav Men Aleph. You have to look at the Marsha there and other Mefarshim there. Very interesting. But Yosef Engel is the one, I think, who very strongly makes the point about, you know, this destiny idea. I think he notes the language, number one, ger haba lizgayer. So it's like, don't say goy haba lizgayer, you say ger haba lizgayer. But in particular, he's interested in a substantive point. And that is the sugya in Psachim. Our sugya in Psachim discusses the problem of Dav Zayin, kol mitzvos mevarchen aleim over la siyasan. So the Gemara's exception seems to be tvila, and tvila's geirin, because you can't have tvila's geirin, you can't have overlasi yasan, because the person is not yet invested with Kedushas Yisrael. And there's a debate among the Rishonim, you know, whether or not all tvilos because of tvila's geirin, or you know, you're mechalik literally between tvila's geirin and others. Either way, so some of the Achronim ask, including Rabbi Yosef Engel in that piece in Galioni Ashas, they say, okay, fine, so you're going to say the bracha after, right? But it's still, the bracha still says, Asher kedishanu b'mitzvosa vitzivanu ala tvila. So where's the vitzivanu? Now, it was a voluntary decision, it was an act of volition for a ger to be this ger. It has to be an act of volition, right? He has to agree on his own. You know, it's... you know, there's Kabbalah Sol Mitzvos. So what's that? Sherkin Shonu B'Mitzvos of Vitzivanu. So that's where he has this terrific comment where he says that, you know, a ger is omeid lehizgayer. We just don't know it until after he does it. But once he does it, right, so that's the way that we look at it. That's the diuk of ger haba lehizgayer. I think that's a very interesting... Again, I don't think everybody agrees with it. But that's maybe that's the pshat in Mazalayu Hayasham in the sugya in Shabbos. Either way, I think there are two, you know, broadly speaking, perspectives. One is this destiny idea, and the other is no, it's a total new creation. But it's a new creation which then connects you with the tzibur. If you take the first view, it's even easier, right, to explain, you know, the continuity things. You know, Bnei Avram, Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu, even connections to Yerusha, you know, etc. Kol Yisrael Arevim issues and so on. If you take the second view, it's obviously easier to explain the limitations, you know, and more difficult to explain some of these things. But, you know, as with all of these kind of topics, you know, there is really mixed evidence, and it's also reasonable to make certain chilukim. One of the chilukim that I think very reasonable to make, just as it is with Doros Habayim, is, you know, things that come agav or by virtue of being connected with the tzibur, as opposed to, you know, purely, you know, as, you know, an individual. That's one. Past and present. Past and future, like the Mishnah Melech is saying, the difference between Vidui, Maestros, and Bikurim. You know, going forward, a Ger who chooses to align himself with Klal Yisrael and becomes a Yisrael in all respects, you know, and if he decides to change his mind, he's Chozer L'Suro, he's a Yisrael Mumar, so it's an irrevocable decision. It has to be an irrevocable decision. That's part of the Yisod here. So he's totally part of the future of Klal Yisrael. With regard to his past, so it's a little trickier. He totally identifies with the past. He needs to identify with past. I mean, the whole idea of Geirus is Amecha Min Elokai Chalokai, right? In the Rus paradigm. So there are both of those aspects, and they're definitely interconnected. And we're even suggesting that the Amecha Mi, you know, is a way of you know, getting into the past history and to other aspects of it. But obviously there are certain experiences, you know, which as an individual he didn't go through. You know, so the things that have to do with a deep understanding or commemorations or whatever they are, you know, having, you know, actually been there, you know, not necessarily, you know, physically, but even Betoras, having been there, Betoras Doras Habayim, you know, as opposed to Gershon Iskayer, you know, Kikotan, you know, Shanola Dami, you know, has a certain kalos, a certain impact as well. And that is where you get these discussions about, you know, Nachala, and, you know, Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoseinu, and B'nei Avraham Avinu. Now, to the extent that we're talking about, you know, fully identifying, you have to identify with the past of Klal Yisrael. That's a sine qua non for Geirus. I say that's part of the Amecha Mi. It's not just going forward. It's embracing the past. You know, we've spoken many times about also the concept of time. In Yadus, the past is very much, you know, part of the present. That's a critical aspect in all Zecher and Zikarons and in all of the Moedim, each Moed in its own way. It's critical to Tshuva, it's critical to Sibrit Yis Mitzrayim, it's critical to the experience of Maimon Har Sinai, and so on and so forth. So that, of course, a Ger, part of his Kabbalas Gerus is, you know, not just, you know, I'll go forward with you, but it's accepting and identifying and perceiving himself to the extent possible, you know, part of that. However, there are certain aspects, whether it's of commemoration or chiyuv or whatever, that have to do with not the identification with the past, but the actual experience of the past. And those experiences, you know, are particularly an open question if you don't take the destiny view. And even if you do take the destiny view, there's still no denying the Kakatan Shanolad part, namely that there's something in the Maisa Geirus which is a break from the past, and which therefore the experiential parts, the national experiential parts, I mean, of whether it's, you know, the threat of Ahasuerus, you know, or you know, the actual experience of Knisa La'aretz, you know, and you know, Kabbalas Nachala, as the case may be, you know, some of these things, you know, are not part of that experience. Again, to the natural born next generation child of a Ger, you know, that's not an issue, right? Even, you know, a Ger Bas Gerim, but because it has to do with, again, the status of being a natural born Yisrael as opposed to making a decision at a certain point. Moreover, things that have to do with being a pure mitzvah, the omeid, as opposed to somebody who accepts upon himself, you know, Kabbalah's, you know, Omalkos Shemayim, right? Again, Godel Mitzvah Miosa, Mishena Mitzvah Miosa, in some respects, and even if that isn't the case, again, Bali Tosfos have a psychological explanation, you know, for it, but that aside, in addition to that, or separate from that, you know, the idea of being a mitzvah from Jewish terms is, you know, is a positive one. It's not a negative one. So you get more credit, you know, when you volunteer. But the chalos of being a mitzvah is very important. Making yourself a mitzvah is an amazing thing for a ger to do. But the fact that he's not mitzvah to be a mitzvah, that's kind of what Yosef Engel is dealing with in Mitzivanu, is something which detracts from certain, you know, elements, very very few, in his profile, and therefore that impacts. So what I'm trying to show is that, you know, mostly a ger is fully integrated, despite kikotan shenola dami, even if you say it wasn't destined, even if you emphasize, you know, his choice and the break in the past and so on, the ability, you know, the reality of identifying with the past and with the tzibur gets him practically, you know, everything or anything, you know, that is meaningful, you know, to full Kedushas Yisrael, with a couple of small exceptions. Having said that, even if you take the other view, even if you take the destiny view, you know, which helps even get over those hurdles more effectively, in the end of the day, the reality of Kekotan Shinola, the reality of not having been a mitzvah and of choosing to be a mitzvah, the reality of not having just grown up with, again, spiritually, because you can have a Tinuk Shenishba, and, you know, and you can have a ger, you can have a guy who grows up and thought that he was Jewish, and, you know, he just never knew his past history, and he, you know, he, from the day that he was born, he was, you know, and you could have somebody who was a Tinuk Shenishba, who has the greatest yichus, and, you know, we're not talking about the low plug, you know, extremes here, but in terms of structuring, you know, what is likely to produce these sensitivities, et cetera, there still remains an important difference. So these are some of the issues. There was a question. You had a question?
No,
Josh?
I was just going to add that I was just thinking, even while the Mishnah Malach says Bikurim is a forward-looking, you know, process,
yeah,
at the same time we're saying Arami Ovidavi.
Yeah, and that's why there's a discussion in the Yerushalmi about it.
Right.
And again, I think the point is, and the answer to that, I think, also is, you know, something that I alluded to, which is, you know, that identification with the past is always part of the present, you know, for every Oved Hashem anyway. Because we live in the past. Not live in the past like the way they say it now, like, oh, you're living in the past. Meaning we, you know, we live in different time zones. You know, it's part of the greatness of Klal Yisrael. So we can redeem our past, we can change our pasts, we can be inspired by our pasts, you know, are with us, you know, and so on. So, you know, there's not a complete break. We do say Aram, you know, and there is, of course, a recounting of the history. The question is, are we recounting the history, you know, in mostly in a past way, or also, or even primarily in a present or future way? That is, those are, I think, legitimate distinctions, but they're subtle. So I think you're right. Okay, good. Yeah, that is in terms of the Geirus part. The other part is Mitzvah Hasidus LiYischadesh. Okay, so there, of course, this idea of the Tzibur or destiny might be an issue. The Tzibur part is not so much the question. But what do we mean that Mitzvah Hasidus LiYischadesh and Kimu VeKiblu, you know, are part and parcel of the Mesorah? So, again, I think there are different ways to understand it. One way is, you know, to dismiss it or to narrow it and to say, you know, it's mostly an asmachta b'alma. However, there are ways, again, to understand future developments in more fundamental ways, not just as an asmachta. So one way is to talk about the authority of mitzvos kuasidos liyischadesh, and that is that they're rooted in the past and in the authority of Maimed Har Sinai. We could say Shalavitka V'yaredcha, we could say Losasur. Again, going back to the sugya in Shabbos and Daf Chav Gimel and in Sukkah, right? Heichan V'tzivanu, and so on. Again, we did talk about it this year, right? When we talked about the Gemara Numa, what? Yeah, we're talking about Masachet Bekuvia and so on. We talked about it. You know, it's an interesting question, right? But if really the authority makar, you know, is part of the core system, so in that sense, mitzvahs asidus l'yizkadesh have their roots in the present. That's one point. The second point is that drabanans, many drabanans, as we know, are ke'en d'oraisa. Here you might be mechalik between different types of drabanan. But ke'en d'oraisa, in which case they're either kiyumim of d'oraisas, or at least on a d'rabbanan level, an extension of d'oraisa. In some cases, they're actually kiyumim. This gets you into the whole, again, we're not going to do it, the whole divrei sofrim discussion again, although that has to do with, you know, how things are learned or where things are learned from. But, you know, we know that many d'rabbanans are kiyume d'oraisa, or at least ke'en d'oraisa, and we treat them that way. Even the topic that we have been doing, you know, the Shavuos themselves, you know, what's, you know, the difference between the drabanan of a Heses and the drabanan of a Nishba v'Notel, or the types of, you know, Nishba v'Niftar drabanans and Nishba v'Notel's drabanans, the idea of Kein Doraisa, you know, right, you know, you're not allowed to be, you know, a Mavatel, an Isur, you know, through Rove. That the Gemara says in a bunch of places, and the Bali Tosa say, as far as the Rabbanans are concerned, there's a difference between Rabbanans that are Kein Doraisa, you know, and regular Rabbanans. So this is a big issue. It's a Maisim Shebechol Yom. We have whatever you deal with Rabbanans. So another way to explain, or to, let's say, upgrade Rabbanans, you know, Afilu Mitzvos Asiros L'Yizkadesh, you know, in addition to the source of authority of Lo Sasur, is to speak about it in these terms. In other words, especially kiyumim, drabanan that are kiyumim d'oraisa, and even the ones that are drabanan but are ke'en d'oraisa, they're basically an extension of the din d'oraisa. A third way is similar to what we just said about gerim, and that is to look at you know, certain drabanans kind of as not just the authority for them, not just the kiyumim or the concepts, you know, which they expand, but to look at them themselves as, you know, things that were, you know, kind of destined, you know, to be part of the corpus of Klal Yisrael. That's Mikra Megillah, Neros Chanukah. You know, when Chazal look for Ramazim, what are they really saying? Are these asmachtas? First option? Are they a way of showing that there's a kiyum d'oraisa here, or a herchev, you know, of a kein d'oraisa? Or is it a way of showing that, you know, the Torah really did anticipate, you know, that these changes, the Ribbono Shel Olam is Hoya Hove V'yiyeh, right? So all of history is, whatever that means, you know, is laid out, you know, in front of him, and therefore the other Ramazim in the Torah of these drabanans themselves. That's a very concrete view of it. You know, that come somehow. There's like, you know, these were all destined, you know, to be. Another possibility is that mitzvah sasidos liyizkadesh, not just the authority for it lo sasor, but maybe the methodology for it, you know, exists in the existing halacha, right? Whether that's Yud Gimel Mido Shatorah Nedreshes Bahen in some cases, or again the methodology of creating actual drabanans. So these are different approaches. The Ritva, of course, in Masechet Rosh Hashanah suggests the possibility. Really has a formulation that the Torah anticipates, and said certain nasmachtos aren't really mnemonic devices at all, And do you have language there of Ritva?
It's not on Tazayin.
Yeah. I think Tazayin.
I'll try.
Yeah, if not. He really has the suggestion, it's a very radical suggestion, that what we speak about when the Gemara says, O Asmachta, you know, he, or Sabchina Nakra, that we don't mean it's a mnemonic device and it isn't the authentic Makar. We mean that, you know, it was Merumas, that this development is already Merumas, you know, in the Pesukim themselves, in the Torah itself. Or at least it's, yeah, you got it? Yeah.
So,
wow, that's like pretty radical view. Now, you could say that in a more moderate way, and that is that, because again, he is, of course, attributing it still to the Chachamim, it saw as a din in many cases of a Drabbanan, like Sveka Drabbanan Lekula and so on, because of the Chachamim's role, Heim Tiknu, or other characteristics. Again, we hinted at this when we talked a little bit about Lasasur at that point, right? So you could also say that there are Ramazim, or there are possibilities, like, you know, In the Torah's formulations, there are embedded like options, you know, for the Chachamim, you know, to be inspired by or to consider. And maybe there are more that didn't get developed, right? Once you say the Ritva's idea, but certainly according to the Ritva, the idea of Dvarim Asidim Lizchadesh just takes on a very, very different meaning. Again, the Ramban, as we know in his perspective on the assay of this assay of Shabbos, the idea that Shvusim, you know, clue into the Drabbanans that are part of the assay of Shvisa v'Shabbos, is saying something different. That's where the Drabbanans, where there's like a tone, and they're, you know, the Drabbanan Hinichu Chachamim, you know to define what constitutes the spirit of a certain day or of a certain halacha. But there too, you have a situation of the details being asidim lihiskadesh, right? But this being part of the corpus. In those cases, the Rambam is talking about kiyumim doraisa or doraisas, albeit not betoras, let's say, the particular maisa, but, you know, violating, you know, or you know, undercutting, you know, an existing doraisa, based on the status of a din derabbanan. And I think, again, that, you know, Kiddushin Kesef may be understood that way, and, you know, what the Chachamim can give and what they can take away. Again, we don't want to go into all the details of it, but we have different models. Interestingly, we particularly have these models, I think I did give you the Marmok almost, right, to look at, the Ramban and Shor Shalev, Yeshua. So the Ramban basically proposes some of these models for the Rambam, I'm sorry, for the Bahag in defense of the Rambam. Right, the Bahag counted Mikra Megillah and Neiros Chanukah in his Minyan Taryag, and the Rambam was really, really upset. Right, he said, you can't do that. I mean, you know, for various reasons, but fundamentally you can't do it because they're Darabanan. There's a difference between Darabanas and Daraisas. So what does the Ramban? Ramban like takes several, you know, suggestions. He makes several proposals. So one of them is that all the Bahag really meant was that the samchut, the authority for creating drabanans, is a doraisa authority. You have that line? Like, if you can't find it, I'm not going to spend more time, but it's strewn throughout Shorish Beis. He has like these, that's one formulation he has. A second formulation that he has is that the methodology, right, of drabanans, you know, can be found, you know, in the Doraisa, in the Din Torah. Right? And a third is that basically these things were, you know, either destined to become part of the corpus, or at least that the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, as a Kol Yodea, right, knew that they were going to be, you know, it's like a glimpse into the future. You see those lines or not?
Yeah, I'm just trying to find the exact one.
Yeah, that's one. That's the authority one.
Yeah,
then he has another one where he says, like, you know, that like these are the ones that were destined to unfold. And another line also are connected with where he kind of that this is the Rabbeinu Shalom's. He knew it, that it would happen.
I didn't get a chance to get through the whole thing.
Oh, that's okay. So you look it up in short space. It's good read. It's good summer reading. Okay. But I'm just pointing out that these different formulations all exist in, you know, these major Rishonim. And it's, of course, very ironic, but, you know, irony is not a question. Irony is an irony. That, you know, that the Rambam and Ramban, getting back to you know, what we talked about when we learned the Gemara and Yuma, you know, debate lo sasur, right? I mean, the Rambam's view is that when you violate a mitzvah drabanon, that you violate lo sasur minat Torah, on drabanons and even on syogim, because you could have been mechalik between different types of drabanons. There are syogim and gzeros, right? And then there are, you know, shvusim, and then there are mitzvahs drabanon, or more, you know, more, I guess, robust rabbanans. There's a big debate, you know, can you say vitzivanu about minhagim? That's a debate between the Bali Tosis and others. Tosis about, you know, halal on Chalamoid Pesach, and halal on Rosh Chodesh, right? The big Tosis in Brachos, and elsewhere. Tosis also in Sukkah, actually. The people learn Sukkah this year, towards the end of Sukkah, whatever it is, Mem Vav, Mem Zayin, whatever it is, the Sugya of Chibud Arava, Mevarchin, you know, Alam Bindag. So, either way, the Rambam was of the opinion, as we know, that you violate Lo Sasur Doraisa, you know, when you violate Dinim Durabana. And in Shorosh Beis, you know, the Ramban really vehemently attacks that if that were the case, there should be no difference between Doraisas and Rabbanans, and Sfeika Doraisa, you know, should be, you know, only, you know, Lakula, or Sfeika Rabbanan should be Lakumbra, and all sorts of questions which we touched on earlier in the year. I was trying to develop the idea that, you know, that the Ramban kind of read the Rambam, you know, a little bit uncritically or in the extreme, as saying that there are no differences, know, between drabanans and daraisas, because you always violate lo sasur. So every drabanan is a ma'isa ve'er daraisa shall lo sasur. And what I was trying to explain was, I don't think that's what the Rama means. I think what the Rama means is drabanans are drabanans, and when you violate them, that triggers an iser of lo sasur. But the chafta of the mitzvah, and as a ma'isa ve'er, either way, they are fully identified as drabanans. Anyways, but there is an interesting irony that, you know, on the one hand, the Rambam went ballistic against the Bahag, you know, for counting any mitzvahs d'rabbanan, and the Ramban is the one who, defending the Bahag, you know, is suggesting all sorts of, you know, mechanisms to justify, you know, including d'rabbanans, you know, in a d'oraisa list of mitzvos, including things like, you know, the authority, the glimpse into the future, you know, and so on and so forth. And then in Shorosh Beis, everything like flipped, you know. The Rambam is explaining, you know, that Lo Sasur, you know, is Minat Torah, even for Drabbanans. And the Ramban is the one saying, well, you know, Im Kvar as Kvar, so then, you know, there should be no difference whatsoever between Drabbanans and Daraisas, when he himself was highly sensitive in Shorosh Aleph, you know, to there being differences mostly, you know, and yet, you know, elevating or catapulting Drabbanans in a certain way. So again, I don't think it's a stira, I just think it's an interesting irony. Okay, so that's in terms of Mitzvah Hasidus Leischadesh. The other thing I wanted to mention very quickly is we talked about why Lo Sisa should be so chamor, like four or five different overlapping ideas. One other thing I just wanted to mention quickly, and that is Kol aver shebetor neframi menu v'kami menu umi mishpachto. Kol aver shebetor mi mishpachto lo. Haksiv samti ani as panai b'ishahu b'mishpachto. Imu chata mishpachto mai chatas. Lo malach enucha mishpacha sheish ba moches. Shein kula moksim v'sheish ba listim. Shein kula listim. B'pnei shemechapin alav. So, and then, you know, the continuation of the Gemara on that. So that's just, again, another fascinating, you know, big hashkafa, you know, interface issue, but, you know, it's not just hashkafa, these are halachos. What is the, you know, again, there's an overlap also in the explanations of these things. What is the relationship between individual culpability and accountability and responsibility, you know, and the framework of the family? Like, before we were talking about, the dimension of Klal Yisrael and its impact on the individual. What about the dimension of family, you know, and the individual? Like, when do we say that, you know, that a person's shortcomings, you know, affect or at least reflect, you know, his family environment? When do we say that and when don't we say it? So that is a very, very, I think, very interesting issue. And there are all sorts of, you know, kind of different Gemaras that discuss this. One could take one of two perspectives. One is that take the Gemara here in the narrowest way. Namely, it's likely that if you're a chote, so your family's covering up for you. They're like, you know, not upfront, you know, responsible for your behavior, let's say, and certainly not in a more amorphous way, but, you know, the likelihood is that they are cooperating, I guess, with the crime, or at least, you know, preventing its being exposed with everything that goes along with it. The part of the cover-up, if you will, you know, an accessory after the fact, is that what they call it? Maybe what the Gemara means here is something far more ambitious, and that is that again, well, this is a little plug statement. Obviously, there are exceptions to all these rules, but that, you know, the idea of family environment and larger, you know, family identification and responsibility, what the role of family in chinuch, you know, for Klal Yisrael, Moshe Lamad Verdoma, again, just like the environment of the tzibur is a halachic factor. When we, again, studied Sanhedrin, you know, we started the year with Shoftim v'Shotrim Tita Nechav B'chol Sharecha, and trying to explain that in addition to, of course, having access to Dayanim for their deterrent, for their efficiency, to prevent arkos, you know, to prevent miscarriage of justice and violence and so on in the community, but just the idea of having Elohim Elokim in a community, having the role model, right, of walking Sifrei Torah, of people who represent morality and, you know, halachic maximalism, having them in a community is important. That sets a certain tone. And contrasting that with, you know, with Egla Rufa, right, whether it's a kene zikne ha'ir, I've take responsibility and say yadeno lo shafchus adam hazeh, and you know, Chazal's comment, you know, v'chisol kadaitach, that they were really the ones who killed this person, but, you know, lo patarnuhu below lina below, you know, shtia, you know, and so on. So again, that can be understood in the narrowest way. The way I understand it is in the broadest way, meaning what we're really saying is, like, you know, at the end of the day, if you know who killed this guy, so that's a regular homicide. But if you don't, then on a certain level, we should also take the opportunity or you know, be thinking about the nature of this environment from a spiritual point of view. And the Zikne Ha'ir, you know, are people, you know, who have to take extra responsibility for the kind of things that can happen, you know. It can always be an aberration, you know, but it could also be a reflection of, you know, the tone that is set, you know, by the leaders of a community. And that's, I think, the idea of Shoftim Shotrim. That's the idea of Tadena L'Shafchus Adam Hazeh, and of course Parlam Dar Shel Tzibur, and all sorts of other halachos as well. A lot of the institutions that we require in communities, you know, a Tamchui Tzedakah, you know, a yeshiva. So of course they're institutions that function, and their pragmatic function is critical to the aspirations of a community of Ovdei Hashem. But in addition, I think it can be demonstrated that there is a component of just, you know, the institutions themselves and what they stand for and the people who run it, you know, having a role as well. So all of that is, of course, inflated, you know, significantly on the family level. Right? People are a function of their upbringing, you know, and the first line of tone setting and so on is parental. Right? Shlosha shutfim la'adam. You know, we have said this in the past also, that part of what's unique about Kibud Av V'Em, Lekula and Lechomra, is the fact that, you know, Gimel Shutfim La'adam, and that to some extent that the model of authority, that's why Kibud Av V'Em is in Hilchos Mamrim, both in reality, you know, in terms of a child's upbringing, you know, where he learns the concept of authority, of, you know, reliance, of trust, all those things come from parents. That's a heavy, you know, responsibility. It, you know, definitely justifies a very expansive notion of kavod and mora, one which, you know, kashem kashem, you know, which is compared to talmidei chachamim, which is also compared to the rabbanu sholem. But it also means that, you know, the with heavy responsibility comes accolades and credit and benefits, and also with that same responsibility comes, you know, accountability and liability. So who a child is, you know, there's the Ben Sora Mora part, you know, where, which is in Hilchos Mamrim, you know, a child who relates to his parents in a certain way, you know, that has a certain remarkable significance. And at the same time, you know, the failure of children can reflect poorly upon parents. And in this broader sense of their responsibility and the kind of, you know, atmosphere and environment, you know, that they create. So what's fascinating is that you find different formulations of parental or family, you know, responsibility. Again, in our Gemara, it's mechapim aleihem, or in the broader sense, like in this person, you know, if you have, and again, of course, everybody understands there can be an individual aberration, and but we're talking about in general terms. You know, ein mishpacha shall, you know, mochsin, you know, or ein moches shein mishpacha shall mochsin, you know, and, you know, that broader, you know, idea is at play. So are we talking about in the narrower sense, after the fact, or something specific that they did or didn't do? Or are we talking about this much, much bigger idea? So we find different places. I just mentioned the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Nun Beis Amud Aleph, of course, a famous one, based on the Psukim. You know, Bas Kohen Kitechel Liznos, Es Aviyah Hi Mechalales, right? Imnagu Ba Kodesh, Imnagu Ba Chol, Imnagu Ba Kavod, Imnagu Ba Bizayon, Kor Lebas Rasha, right? To Bas Rasha, Afapisha Aviyah Tzadik. So what is all that, right? Is that, you know, after the fact, and just like, you know, again, because, you know, of the way it turned out, or is mechapeh aleha, and so on? Or is this a really, really an indictment of the whole family environment, you know, and this person, you know, who outwardly seems to be, you know, a tzaddik and a yashar, you know, but, you know, didn't invest the time, or the people closest to him, you know, see a different side, or at least, you know, weren't exposed in such a way, you know, to deter, you know, this kind of lesson. That's an interesting question. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Beis, the Gemara in Sanhedrin Mem Tesum and Beis, the Gemara speaks about the relationship between Skila and Sreifa, which is more Chamur. So the Gemara originally says, Skila is Chamura mi Sreifa, Shkei Nitna le Megadef, the Ovid of Avodah Zarah, or poshet yedeim beikar. Right, that's avodah zara. It's never pasha. And then the Gemara says maybe not. Maybe sreifa is chamura. Ki nitna labas kohen shemechalelas, right, esavia. So it's interesting when you think about it. I always thought it was interesting. Not sure if the I think some of the Achronim talk about it there. I think I'm not remembering specifically. Like why in Megadef aren't you taking the parents to task in the same way that you are in Bas Kohen Kitechel Liznos Esavia Hi Mechalelas? An interesting question. Again, when it comes to morality in particular, the Bas Kohen and the Znus, so the Gemara in Ksuva Saf Mem Hayam and Aleph, also you have a Zona, right, Soklinosa, or Malkinosa rather, Al Pesach Beis Avia, Ru'u Gidulim Shegidaltem, that's Gemara in Ksuva Saf Mem Hay, right? So is it possible that there are certain, in addition to everything else, there are certain Averos, which are more nitan, to be blaming. I don't mean the blame game. I'm not talking about, what I call negatively spiritual scapegoating, here. But I mean, in other words, let's say to attribute, failures and flaws to parents or to the family environment, etc. It's very possible that for different Averos, right, we have a different perspective. Sometimes it's, very much a function of the individual and not necessarily a reflection. So what about Avodah Zarah and Megadev? What about, Lo Sisa, Shvuas Shaker? And what about Znus? Znus seems to be one where, again, the Torah itself is very explicit, about this issue. Molech happens to be something that we think is connected to parents, but maybe that's because of the nature of on the Avodah Zarah side. But is it possible that different areas of halacha we look at the parental role or the family role in slightly different ways? Anyways, a really interesting discussion about this question of a Bas Rasha, what impact she has on looking at her parents. Just a couple of quick makoros. So the Tajbeit says a tshuva in Chela Gimel Simen Kuf Tazvav. He says, yeah, the father who, on all other scales, is a tzaddik, is defined as a rasha, in this case. And the Tumas Hadeshen in Chela Beis Simen Reish Samach Zayin is much more ambivalent about all that. It says we call her a Rishia Bas Rishia, even though on some level he remains, the father because of his good deeds and his unblemished record, a tzaddik. The Chavos Yair has a tshuva in Siman Samachay, where he says, while he's alive, he becomes, a Rasha. We give him the status of Rasha, and after he dies, we refer to him again as a tzaddik. There's like mixed information. But to me, it's just an interesting, I don't think, there's so much halacha lemaisa here, but, it's an interesting halachic, philosophic discussion about how we really look at or reevaluate, people based on the impact that they had, where there's an obligation to have that kind of impact. So there are a number of other sugyas also that are connected to this. The Gemara in Sukkah Daf Nun Vav Beis, the Gemara in Gittin Daf Peches Amud Aleph. When you have a chance, look them up. Megillah Chafei Amud Beis, Sanhedrin Pei Beis Amud Beis, Sanhedrin Kufid Aleph, and probably many more. But it's an interesting question about the role of family environment. Again, the family and the individual as opposed to Klal Yisrael individual. Regarding Klal Yisrael and the individual, so that's, I mentioned, the Gemara also mentions Klal Yisrael Arevim Zelazeh. There seem to be two girsos, whether it's Klal Yisrael Arevim Zelazeh or Klal Yisrael Arevim Zebazeh. There's a well-known machlokes in the Sugin Rosh Hashanah of Yatzamotzi, whether or not how we understand the din of Kol Yisrael Areidim Zelazeh or Zepazeh. Rashi seems to say that the reason that Yatzah is Motzi is because the Yatzah part is really incomplete until, you know, Chavero, at least the Chavero that he can have an impact on. That's an interesting phenomenon too. We're not saying that as long as there's any member of Klal Yisrael hasn't heard Kiddush, so you haven't fulfilled yours yet either. But the point is that as long as there's someone who you can impact or influence, or somebody in your orbit, you know, whose kiyum is incomplete, so that's not considered to be a superfluous bracha. Your, you know, kiyum is incomplete as well. That's a very remarkable perspective on this issue. In a way, it's more ambitious and less ambitious at the same time. In other words, if you take the first assumption, which is the most ambitious, meaning I haven't fulfilled Kiddush or whatever mitzvah I'm doing, if my neighbor, you know, who I can, you know, facilitate, you know, as well, hasn't finished his. In terms of, you know, drawing the two of us together, you know, that's a very remarkable, very ambitious statement of Arvus. Of course, once you have that, then, you know, it falls, you know, and almost naturally to say, so, you know, it's really, the Yatza is really lo Yatza, and therefore he can still be Motzi, because he's just trying to be Motzi. The other view, which is sometimes associated with the Shiltos, is more that, you know, he's an island and I'm an island. Not really an island, but, you know, he's an individual and so am I, and I fulfilled my obligation, but since he hasn't, you know, I can make this bracha for him. So again, it's not, on the first stage, it's less ambitious, because, you know, my kiyum is separate from his, but in the second stage, it's more ambitious, because we're acknowledging that I already made my kiddush, or heard my tekiyah shofar, or whatever the case may be. So, you know, this should really be a bracha miuteres, you know, almost a bracha levatala, or a bracha levatala, ilav, you know, his needs. So in the sense that it acknowledges his needs and allows me, right, to sacrifice religiously, you know, halachically, you know, for his needs, as opposed to an expansion of my needs. You know, I need to be able to do this because I still haven't fulfilled my obligation. So there's an ego-centric, selfish aspect. Of course, the selfishness is contingent, in the Rashi view, on this way more magnanimous, you know, perspective to begin with. So both of them, I think, and I don't think they're mutually exclusive either, are really fascinating perspectives. But one, in a way, is Kol Yisrael Areivim Zebazeh, meaning my fate and his are intertwined, and the other is more an acknowledgement of our, you know, separate, distinct islandness, you know, and not islandness, but islandness, you know, nomad is an island, yeah? So, it's called Yisrael Mora Reivim Zeh Laze. And it's, you know, in a way it goes to the question of what Arvus is, which we briefly talked about also when we were talking about Eschaivus Midas, and certainly last year spoke a lot more about. In other words, if you see Arvus as a kind of Eschaivus, I don't get anything, but I'm Eschaiv. That's one model of Arvus. And the other model of Arvus is, and maybe, you know, the necessary model. Again, the Eschaivus one says, listen, I don't get anything, and I'm still obligated. So that's very magnanimous. But the second model says, I'm a Lova too. Or maybe I'm the prime Lova. Even though I didn't get anything, I'm a Lova because he gets it. So that's more, again, more magnanimous, you know, in stage one. And then once that's true, as I have to pay back because I'm a Lova. I'm not a third party. I'm a second party. Being a second party, you know, is the Kol Yisrael Areivim Zeh Bazeh. You know, acknowledging that I'm a third party is more Kol Yisrael Areivim Zeh Lazeh. Anyways, so that's a big issue. And as I alluded to, you know, in terms of Pesachat Shabbos, the whole sugya of Chatei Kadesh Tzake Chavercha, which some Rishonim do connect with Arvus and others do not, but it doesn't really matter to me whether it's officially connected or not. But the whole phenomenon of it, meaning that I fall on my spiritual sword, you know, for the greater good, you know, of what? Klal Yisrael or really of my neighbor? And then, of course, the question is, what are the circumstances? You know, how much of it is his fault that he's in this situation? You know, what constitutes spiritual maximalization of a bad situation? The details are not important for now, but there is like a whole topic, you know, connected with this, and it really highlights this idea of arva. So it's not when we speak about, you know, this status, it's not just a melitza bialma, you know, like good propaganda for Kol Yisrael, you know, chaverim. The halachos themselves, whether it's yatzamotzi or these other things, certainly chadei kadesha tzaka, demonstrate that these are substantive dinim that allow, you know, just a different perspective to operate, you know, when it comes to certain of these broad issues. That's very fascinating. Okay, and then finally, last thing to mention, that is the din of Shvuas Hashem. Before I get to Rav and Shmuel, I think we're almost time up. Shvuas Hashem Chala al Shneim. What does that mean? So what does that mean? Anybody see anything on that? Shvuas Hashem Chala al Shneim. It sounds like the Gemara here on Lamed Tes on the base, and the Gemara later on Mem Zion, right, seem to be saying that there is some sort of chilul shvua, right? Not just on the nishba l'sheker, but on the mashbia as well. And the question is why? So again, there are numerous perushim. I'm just going to mention the four that are here in these two places. Rashi and Lamites. Of course, the tricky thing to figure out is why is the mashbia? What do you mean shuas Hashem chalal shneim? Right? What's his problem? He's not lying. So Rashi says on Lamed Tes on the base that because he didn't transact with an ish ne'aman, he bears some responsibility. That's the chalal shneim. Not clear whether that means that he bears some responsibility for the shvua or for the need for the shvua and for the shem Hashem, which otherwise would be gratuitous. It sounds like per se he's being faulted for the kind of people that he deals with. Rabbeinu Chananel and Lamites says something similar, but instead of speaking about the general character, I'm not sure that if they argue or not, maybe they argue, maybe not, but instead of speaking about the general character of who he's transacting with, it's the idea that the transaction was unsecured, that it wasn't a transaction in the presence of Edim, you know, which would have made any kind of machlokes or and need for a shvua gratuitous. Okay. So whether it's the kind of, you know, unsavory, unscrupulous, you should be, you know, partnering with or transactioning, you know, with such a person per se, or it's, you know, more, again, pragmatic and like, you know, creating machlokas or creating an unnecessary shvua by not taking measure. It's fine to deal with unsavory people. I'm not saying that it is, but you know, you could say that this is the emphasis of Rabbi Meir Chanan, as long as you do so, you know, in a way that, you know, that that makes evident what it is that's happening. Okay. But of also great interest is the other view of Rabbi Meir Chanan, the one on Mem Zayin Oed Beis, and the Rebbe Gash, also the second day on Mem Zayin Oed Beis, where he says that Shvus Hashem Tiyah Ben Shneim, that Shvua Chala Shneim doesn't mean what it seems to mean, which is the, you know, what's challenging, and that is that the innocent Toveya somehow bears some responsibility for the Shvua. It means Mi Bein Shneim Shvua Hashem Chala Shneim. Either the Toveya is a Rasha because he's Goreim Shvua Lechinam, because the guy is going to tell the truth, and he is telling the truth, so why force him into it? Or the Nitva is a Rasha Shenish Balasheker. But demanding a shvua from someone, right, who, you know, is going to be nishba, ba'emes, I'm sorry, who's going to be nishba la sheker, is not my problem, and I'm not even penalized for associating with the unsavory character or not, taking precautions to have edim, etc. If he wants to be nishba l'sheker, that's fully on him. The chiddush is that it's on me, right? If he's nishba b'emes, but I'm demanding that he do that, so there's no sheker, right? Is there any downside to that? That's the chiddush of this particular view. The Rebbe Gash and Memzayin Ud Beis in the first daya thinks very explicitly that the Toveya bears responsibility for the Nitva's Sheker, maybe because of those other reasons, but the emphasis isn't on the unsavory people that he's transacting with or the creation of this problem by lack of precaution. It's on the Shua Sheker itself. In other words, when he's Nishbala Sheker, even though it's his choice to be Nishbala Sheker, my forcing him into a Shua Sheker, he doesn't mention there the precautions that he could have taken or the candidates that he could have done business with. That in itself, the Gram Shua Sheker, let's say, even though, what do you mean Gram Shua Sheker? It's my right to collect, what's owed to me. So that's also very fascinating, again, in terms of how much one's responsibility extends to other people's bad behavior, even their bad behavior vis-a-vis you. And we talked a little about the Schadenfreude, I guess, aspect of all this in general about a Shmua, right? Whether or not, well, at least, let me have the satisfaction that he's being Nishba, Bebezdin, he's giving me my beer. So if I don't really know, what it is, let's say it's kind of suffolk and Swiss Shomer. That's one thing. But what do you mean the Schadenfreude? They don't use the expression Schadenfreude in the Shomer, but at least he's gonna have to lie if he wants to deny what he owes me. And let the Rabbanu Shalom take it from there. So in a way, the Rebbe Gash is saying that's not an acceptable, in this first day of the Rebbe Gash of Mem Zayin, is saying that's not an acceptable view, because there's a Gorem Shvuas Sheker that you should be concerned about in the process. That's interesting. Do I have to be worrying about him being Nishba L'Sheker? Is that like an objective, is a Chefta Shel Shvuas Sheker in the world? Or is that overridden by it, or maybe it's has nothing to do with me at all? Or maybe there's not even such a thing. That's his decision, and it's his, I would say funeral, but it's his, consequence. Right? So these are very interesting, again, perspectives on both, who you deal business with, how you do business, and what your responsibility is, either for a Shvuas MS that is gratuitous, or for a Shvuas Sheker, which is part of his effort to skirt paying you. Is there a difference between knowing he's going to be Nishba L'Sheker, and knowing, and putting him in a situation where you hope it will actually produce, him being Moda? Also an interesting question. Okay. I guess we have to stop. So let's just pose the question for the next thing. The next lines is the machlokas between, just have somebody, Eitan, if you don't mind, did you look at it?
I did not.
Yitzi? Rav Shmuel?
Yeah.
Okay, if you just read a couple of lines in the beginning so we could pose a question, which we have anyway. But, Amar Rav, Kfiras Taina Shtei Kesef. The Shmuel Amar Taina, go ahead.
Amar Rav, Kfiras Taina Shtei Kesef. Shmuel Amar Taina Asma Shtei Kesef.
Yeah. So what is this? What does Rav hold? What the part that he denies has to be a value of Shtekasa, right? And Shmuel? The Taina of the Toveya needs to be Shtekasa, even if the Kfira and the Hoda are only a Pruta. Okay. But it's an interesting phrase also. Kfiras Taina Shtekasa? Why doesn't Rav just say Kfiras Shtekasa? Right? A little bulky. No? You agree? Okay, linguistically. Something to mention. We'll see in a second whether it matters or not. I mean, we already have in a way. Okay. Go ahead, Amar Rava.
Amar Rava, Dikamasi Sikosi de Rav, Ukurik Vati de Shumal. Dikamasi Sikosi de Rav, Diktani Hatanish de Kasev, or Dalsha Pruta, Yu Kiratana Pruta, or Katani. Utanami Hoda Pruta, Yu Kiru Pruta, or Katani.
Yep. Ukroi Kavase.
Shumal. Yasiv Kitin Ishal Ray, who Kasev Kim Lishmor. Makiam Shama Kasashine. Makiel and Dora Hashuva, Kola Hashu. Ukamakona Kihuda.
Okay, so we'll go over some of these issues very, very quickly because we have a lot that we want to finish off and we don't have so much time. But what bears noting for the moment is this: the Gemara thinks that there's mixed evidence linguistically, right, to the Psukim in the Mishnah. Correct? So that really raises, you'd see, the question, what does Rav really have in mind? And this, again, I'm just repeating what we've already talked about when we did Daf Mem way back earlier in the year, right? Or earlier in the second semester, or whatever it was. Namely, what do I mean by that? What is the mechayev of shtei kesef or of moda b'miktzas? Okay. Meaning, if you take the view of Shmuel, right, there are certain assumptions that Shmuel's making, which are vulnerable, and therefore might be the basis for Rav's rejection. Okay, what do I mean? Shmuel says what? Shmuel says the taina has to be shtei kesef. Okay, what's wrong with that? So he has to, number one, assume that the taina is part of the mechayev of Shmuel's Moda B'Miktzas, 100%. What else? And that Shtei Kesef is connected to the mechayev, correct? Because if Shtei Kesef were connected to what? Not to the mechayev, but to the Chefsa Shel Shvua, let's say, then it wouldn't matter. Okay, so you have to assume that Shtei Kesef is connected to the Mechayev. We'll start with that. That the Mechayev is the Taina. What do we mean the Mechayev is the Taina? As opposed to what? Right. In other words, who says that the Taina is the Mechayev? Maybe it's the combination of Taina, Kfira, Hoda, two out of the three, all three, the whole dynamic. Right, it's not just the claim itself is the mechayev. Right, not so simple. Maybe the hodah is the mechayev. Maybe the kfir is the mechayev. Maybe the hodah plus the kfir. Maybe the all three. Right, that's a big issue in Moda B'Miktzas, to try to isolate the three components: the taina, the kfira, the hodah. So that's assumption number two. Right, assumption number one was shtei kesef is a din in the mechayev, not in the chalos or chafza shel shvua. It's not what you're being nishba, it's what triggers the chiyuv shvua. Not so simple. Number two, the taina alone is mechayev. And what about number three? That's a big motive mixus issue in general, correct? Would be, right? What's number three? Maybe the easiest, the lowest, you know, hanging fruit. Maybe. Let's assume the first two assumptions are correct. The taina alone is mechai. And shtei kesef is in the mechai. But? Yoni?
I mean, I assume the kefir is not really part of the mechai.
Say again?
I assume the kefir is not part of the mechai.
Well, isn't that point number two? But I would just say... Kfira is not, I would say what you're saying, you just wouldn't say the last word. But what's not so Israel?
Kfira is not important.
Kfira is not what defines the Taina. That's not so simple. Meaning, I say you owe me $1 million. Right? And the guy says, I don't owe you $1 million. I owe you $100. Right? So, what is the Taina in that case? The Taina is $1 million? Or the Taina is $1 million minus 100? The Taina itself, in other words, are two yichuses, if you will, to the kfira. One is, the kfira is the thing which you're going to be nishba on. Right? In other words, one way to look at the kfira is in terms of the nitva. Right? The kfira is the point of dispute, and that's what, therefore what he's going to, if he's going to be nishba of a niftar, right? So that's what he is going to have to be nishba on. But another way to look at the kfira is that it relates also not to the nitva, but to the toveya. Now, it's only once there's a kfira, mitzara nitva, that we can really, truly define what the taina is. Because if the undisputed part is not really part of the taina, and yeah, it's a question. So if I say, you owe me $100, and the guy says, I don't owe you $100, I owe you $50. So really, what am I claiming that's disputed? $50. So it's true, that's what he would be nishban, because that's what he's denying. The kfira is the davar shenishbalav. But the kfira also defines how much it's just a way of whittling down, you know, technically, the taina rishono, you could say, or the taina klalit, whatever you want to call it, you know, that is the taina al pidin, or that's just the background for figuring out what the real halachic taina was. So when Shmuel said, when Rav said, kfiras taina shtei kesef, right, I was making the comment, that sounds a little bulky, right? Was Rav saying, the important thing is the kfira? He could have been saying three things. He could have been saying, the important thing is the kfira, because it's the kfira which is mekayem of the shul. Or, the important thing is the kfira, because it's the kfira upon which he is nishba. Chetza shel shul. Or was he saying, the important thing is the kfira, because it's true that the taina is mechayev. But the real taina is defined not by the first salvo, but by the disputed part, the kfira. Right? No? Josh? Looks skeptical.
Very interesting.
Ooh. That's like, you know, very interesting.
No,
I'm just joking. Okay, so that's what we want to look at, you know, going forward. A little bit. So the first thing to look at is something we've seen already, but just very, very quickly, and just to expand it a little bit, and that is, you know, does Shtei Kesef apply only to Bodim Mikzas? Well, we spent time on the Eid Echad question, so we're just going to touch on that in a minute. Then we also, Agav, looked a little bit at Shvuas HaShomrim, Shvuas, you know, Nishma V'Notel. So let's look a little more at that. Regarding Shvuas HaShomrim, again, I keep referring to this Rambam and Ravid. You know, if you have, somebody told me that, they didn't really know where it was. So I think it's Beis Zion? Hilchos Schiras Beis Zion is the one that I'm referring to. Or the Ravid says a Kal V'Chomer. And the other Makoros that I gave, again, we don't have so much time, so... Wait. It's Beis Zion. And then we'll stop here. Yeah, Katan Shehifke, the Rambam and the Ravid, Beis Zion. And the Rimi Gash on Mem Beis Umid Beis. That's the same. Okay, so let's see, what does Rimi Gash think? What does the Ram think? What does the Rambam think? The Ravid. Again, we did it a little bit, but just a little bit more. And then the other Makoros that I gave you, and we'll try to finish up Thursday and maybe one day next week. We'll see if we don't finish. Okay. Again, so Thursday is 7:30.
Yeah. It's also just because if it's now the Tukaya's voice creating the time, it's like we're sort of like down creating what the word time even means.
Say that one more time.
Meaning, if we're letting the clear, so
what are you trying to explain?
No, I was just like explaining my facial expression.
Oh.
If we, again.